Welcome to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Join us for a conversation about faith in everyday life, the trials, the tribulations, and the triumphs. Discussions about how faith matters to you and our community. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, whose mission is to extend Christian ministry by caring for the whole person, body, mind, and spirit, and by working with others to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Now, here's your host, Ted Dotz.
Hello, I'm Ted Dotz, and welcome to Faith Matters. Today, our guest is Dr. Melinda Corwin, who is Associate Professor and Director of the Undergraduate and PhD Programs at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. But more personally to me, Melinda Corwin is a woman I have observed working with stroke victims and caregivers. Not only that, I know she happens to have been very kind and friendly to people who suffer stroke. Melinda, welcome to you. Tell us a bit about you so our listeners will get to know you some.
Thank you for having me. I've been at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center for 22 years, and you mentioned that part of what I get to do is direct our stroke aphasia recovery program, which we call the STAR program. And it is for stroke survivors and their caregivers. And we have the funding to run it for 9 months out of the year right now. And sometimes we have enough to do a community outreach summer program for stroke survivors as well. I also teach classes in our Department of Speech and Hearing Sciences, and I see individual clients or patients who are recovering from traumatic brain injuries or stroke or developmental disabilities that cause some type of speech or language problem.
Melinda, thank you. What a broad range. Now, would you talk a bit about stroke survivor? If I understand correctly, stroke is the third top killer and most crippling disease. Is that right? Would you talk about stroke survivor? What that does to a person.
Oh, it definitely changes the person's life forever and the whole family system from which the person comes, because the roles of family members change when the person has the stroke and survived it. You mentioned it's one of the leading killers. So if it doesn't kill us, we survive it. And that's why we like to say survive instead of victim. We like to call them survivors, because they've been through a great deal and come out on the other side. But caregivers learn to take on new roles and different roles in the household, and it has a great impact on the entire family.
You have seen through the years a lot of caregivers, that is, people not by desire or intention put into a role that all of a sudden they had to rise to meet. What have you learned about caregivers having to rise to meet this difficulty?
Oh, the caregivers have taught me a great deal about rising to the occasion and about finding inner strength and even finding hidden gifts in tragedy, such as a stroke.
So now you have students, undergraduate and graduate. How do you introduce them into care for the caregiver and care for the stroke survivor?
We take what we call a life participation approach to surviving a stroke. So rather than focusing on all the deficits and impairments, which we tend to do with a medical model, we talk about everything that's wrong with the body and the mind, a life participation approach tries to look at resilience and strength and talk about how the person can get back to participating in life again, not letting the stroke control them, rather being a part of life again.
How would you identify resilience?
I identify it as a great deal of strength, finding strength and positivity in the face of adversity, and coming back, if you will, to a place, finding a way to relate.
Melinda, you have experienced some deeply wounding things in life. What has nourished your own resilience?
I just finished a book while I was traveling by Ann Voskamp called 1,000 Gifts. Are you familiar with it?
I'm not.
Well, it was wonderful, but it was about gratitude, being grateful for all sorts of things. So in my own life, that's been a big part of resilience for me, is gratitude. And to tie that back to many of the stroke survivors that I've met and persons with aphasia, they may not have the words left after the stroke and the aphasia to communicate the way you and I are doing now, but they're still able to find gratitude in many things and find other ways to connect.
First, would you tell us what aphasia is and tell us how a person gets to gratitude? Because aphasia, I think, is most debilitating.
Aphasia is most debilitating. And you mentioned that after a stroke, it's the number one cause of disability. So many individuals are not able to return to work after having one. So aphasia is a loss of language. That could be speaking, understanding, reading, and or writing after a stroke. It typically happens when the stroke occurs in the left side of the brain. So it affects the right side of the body. Everything crisscrosses. So the person loses the ability to use his or her right hand, possibly right leg, which means he or she may not be able to walk. They may not be able to write or type on a typewriter, especially if they were right hand dominant. And they lose the ability to speak, understand, read, and or write.
Melinda, if I can imagine having aphasia, I would know what I wanted to say, but I couldn't say it. Now, if I'm right there, I think I would feel a lot of frustration, maybe anger and hostility. So in a moment when we come back after the break, I'd like to ask you how a person in your profession handles that kind of frustration and anger. We will be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Professor Melinda Corwin.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts, and our guest today is Professor Melinda Corwin. And Melinda, a person that is afflicted with aphasia, my thought is that you know what you want to say, but you can't say it. That must be utterly frustrating and cause you to have anger and hostility. How do you work with that in a stroke survivor?
You hit the nail on the head. Aphasia is like having tip of the tongue phenomenon all of the time. You know how sometimes you try to recall a word or a person's name and it won't quite come to you, but you know it. It's not a problem of not knowing it intellectually. You just can't utter it at the moment. That's what happens with aphasia all of the time. So these individuals have not lost their intellect or intelligence. Rather, they've lost their access to the language or the words to describe what it is they're thinking about or what they want to share. So I can only imagine the level of frustration. Since I've recently come back from traveling abroad and visited many countries where I did not speak the language, I know how lost and confused and often frustrated I felt when I couldn't read the signs to follow the directions at the train station. I couldn't find someone who spoke English to ask my questions or to visit with, to connect with, and I felt very isolated and frustrated and confused. So that's as close as I've come to an analogy for what it must be like to live with aphasia on a daily basis.
Isolated, frustrated, and confused. And almost every day now of your professional life, you work with stroke survivors who are in that condition, and you lead undergraduate and graduate students to work with them. What gives you what it takes to do that?
I was raised with two parents that have servants' hearts, and so all my life we grew up serving others and being around individuals of varying levels of education and financial situation. So I think that helped me a great deal. My parents both taught me that opportunities are often disguised as hard work.
Wow, what a great statement. Opportunities are often disguised as hard work. That explains their servant heart?
Perhaps, in a way. They're both still alive, although they don't live here in Lubbock. They live 2 hours away in Big Spring, but I really value my connection with them. I would say they influenced and shaped a lot of who I have become.
I love that phrase, especially the hard work. Often we take another attack on that. Now, you have traveled a great deal. You've been in Thailand, Germany, Australia, Scandinavia. Sometimes you were presenting papers or at professional meetings. Is there something that you've learned from your travels that especially might help you in your professional labor?
I think one of the main things I learned was what we touched on about connecting with people. I find that I'm hungry to do that in whatever country I'm in, although it's much more difficult in countries in which I don't speak the language. So finding other means, for example, music and art and facial expressions and body language, those ways of connecting rather than simply words, I've been able to, I hope, bring back to our treatment and support of individuals with aphasia who have survived strokes and how to connect with those individuals, maybe not through words, but to relate in other ways.
Now, you have the experience of a family, a mother and father with servant heart. You have, I assume, the experience of your education at Texas Tech. You have the experience of travel. You have the experience of teaching and leading groups. When it comes to a caregiver for someone with aphasia, what kind of advice or guidance do you hold out for them? How would you help a caregiver to get to this gratitude you talked about?
That's sometimes very challenging because I can only imagine the fear and frustration that caregivers feel. So when they come to us, sometimes their loved one's stroke is very recent and they're still in a stage of grief and loneliness. And so it's a gradual process. I think listening to other caregivers probably is the most therapeutic of all. And together, this group of caregivers meets weekly and provide support to one another and share stories. We do a lot of sharing of stories in the caregivers network. And through that, some healing and gratitude begin to appear.
Let's see, did you just tell me that one way a caregiver manages to rise to the occasion is to listening to the stories of other caregivers?
Yes.
My gracious, often we think that a professor like you would sit about and have the answers, and instead you said the answers often will come from fellow sufferers. Have I heard you correctly?
Very true.
Very much. Now, how do you convey that, say, to graduate students who have learned a great deal, they've probably studied, read, know many theories, and then to say, well, you will learn maybe best if you will listen to the stories of the caregivers?
Yes, that's challenging because I think in society oftentimes we're taught that silence is a scary thing or a bad thing, and we're definitely afraid of tears. So the first two things I talk about with the graduate students who work with the Caregivers Network is that silence and tears are both very much okay. We also talk about the students not having a role as teacher in that group, rather as facilitator and member of the Caregivers Network.
Silence and tears. Now, that's a hard thing. If you've done graduate study and if you know a whole lot and someone is struggling to get out even a word, you could fill in very quickly for them. But instead, you teach them silence and your own personal tears.
Yes.
How did you come by that?
Probably experience. And again, the survivors and caregivers have taught me more than I've attempted to ever teach them.
I put that down as a statement of humility. Survivors and caregivers have taught me more than I have taught them. How did you learn to listen, and how did you manage to share your tears? We're often taught in this culture not to be silent, but to have answers, and certainly not to cry.
That's a good question. I think personal experience and growth. Once I became less afraid of silence and tears, then and only then was I able to impart that wisdom, if you will, to others.
So through your experience, that meant you had to reflect on it some. Well, we'll be right back after a quick break. You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with Professor Melinda Corwin.
You're listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1 with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health, celebrating Covenant Heart and Vascular Institute. Since 1965, Covenant has brought together cardiac physicians, nurses, and professionals whose sacred mission is compassionate care for every patient. More information is available on cardiac care at 866-4-COVENANT. The views, opinions, and comments that are expressed on this program are solely those of the host and guest and do not necessarily reflect or represent the views and opinions of KTTZ-FM, Texas Tech Public Media, Texas Tech University, Texas Tech University System, or our faculty and staff, our affiliates, our partners, and our sponsors. Welcome back to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. Now again, your host, Ted Dotts.
Welcome back to Faith Matters. I'm Ted Dotts, and our guest today is Dr. Melinda Corwin. I would like to ask you, what programs are available? Many people who are listening to us probably have an experience with stroke and aphasia. What kind of programs are available for them?
For persons with aphasia, they will typically qualify for some short-term speech therapy and physical and/or occupational therapy. Then what typically happens is the healthcare funds run out, and the funds run out much too soon. There's still lots that can be done, but there aren't any funds left to pay for the costs of the therapy. So that's why we started the Stroke Aphasia Recovery Program at Texas Tech Health Sciences Center. It is a community outreach program, no cost to the families, and it's a 9-month program. So we'll start up just after Labor Day in September. And we meet once a week on Tuesdays for an hour. We have 8 different groups, small groups that meet in different rooms in our clinic. And the groups are based on the type and level of aphasia that members have. And then we also have a caregivers network that is one of the 8 groups. So the caregivers have a place to be while their loved ones are in their small group rooms. If anyone is interested, has a friend or family member who has aphasia and might be interested in our STAR program, they could contact me through email or telephone. The telephone is 743-5660, extension 223.
Thank you, Melinda. Now that leads to the next question. What would you recommend to prevent stroke aphasia? Do you have a prevention list?
Well, the absolute best treatment for stroke is prevention. And Dr. Ted Mitchell, our president of the Health Sciences Center, often gives a great talk about how to keep the heart and brain healthy. And he asks the audience, if I could give you a pill that would decrease your risk for stroke and heart attack, improve your ability to sleep well at night, improve your sex drive, improve your attitude, would you take that pill? And everyone answers yes. And then he says, well, the pill is exercise and diet. So if we avoid a sedentary lifestyle and we eat foods that are healthy for us, ones that don't have a lot of high fat content or build up cholesterol, those will decrease our risks for having stroke and or heart attack. A stroke is simply a brain attack. You've heard of heart attack. Sometimes the attack can be on the brain, and when it is, we call that a stroke.
Could you say a little more about attack on the brain?
Yes, it's when blood flow is prevented from adequately getting to the brain. So it would be like a clog in our plumbing, so to speak, but rather at the level of the heart, it's at the level of the brain. That's what a stroke is.
I see. Thank you for the prevention pill. I think you're right. We'll all hear it, but hopefully we'll then observe it. Would you tell us what the warning signs of stroke are?
Yes, there's an easy acronym, FAST, F-A-S-T. If you suspect a person is having a stroke, the F stands for face. Look at the face, ask the person to smile. If they have a lopsided smile, that's a bad sign, possible sign of stroke. The A is for arms. Simply ask the person to raise his or her arms. If one arm does not raise as high or won't go up, there's some paralysis or weakness, that's a sign of stroke. The S is speech. Ask the person to speak or repeat after you. If the speech is slurred or sounds unusual or confused in any way, that's another possible warning sign. And the T in FAST is time. Call 911. We now have medication that can be given within 4 hours of a stroke, but the person has to realize it's an emergency and get to the emergency room quickly. Strokes don't hurt like heart attacks, so a lot of people will ignore the signs and just say, oh, I'll take a nap, maybe they'll go away. These should be taken very seriously, and when in doubt, go to the ER.
I have some experience. I know that in addition to all that you do with people who are suffering, you also have worked homeless people here in this community. I know that you've taught Sunday school, been deeply involved in those kinds of ministries. You've traveled a number of countries, Thailand, Germany, Australia, Scandinavia. What's fun for you in your travels?
Well, I've recently just come back from a visit to France and then Germany, on to Switzerland and Italy. One of the main reasons was to visit my sister. She and her family are living in Germany right now. Both she and I love to go in cathedrals and churches. And we got to see some of the most beautiful, as you might imagine, European churches and cathedrals. So I always love that part of the travels.
You are also a wife and a mother. Now, with all your training and experience, do you have some thoughts of advice, say to people who are listening, especially younger people, about being a wife and being a mother?
I would say when you're giving thanks to God, it's really hard to give anger. I've found that I can't do those two things simultaneously. Sometimes when I haven't known what else to do, I begin giving thanks or thinking of things to be grateful for, having gratitude. And I hope that helps me be a little bit better wife or stepmom or mom.
What a great statement, to give thanks in place of anger. That's quite a challenge. You know?
It is.
A good spiritual challenge. How did you pick that up? I know we talked a little bit about your parents and a servant heart, but that's a pretty major spiritual step to give thanks in place of anger. How would you say you managed to arrive at?
Well, I try to surround myself with wonderful people. So I have a wonderful spouse, 2 great stepsons, a beautiful daughter. I love my coworkers, so I actually enjoy my work and look forward to going. They're fun people to be around, and I just try to have a lot of positive energy.
Enjoy your work. Oh, what a rich thing. Many people listening would give anything to enjoy their work. Now, you came to Texas Tech, began here as a young woman. You were in the band, percussionist. What in the world led you from a young girl entering Tech in the band to the professor that you are today?
After I graduated from Tech, I went to work for what was Methodist Hospital at the time in Lubbock. It's now become Covenant Health System. And I loved my work at the hospital, but I remember when the chairperson of the speech and hearing department called me at work and asked if I might be interested in coming back to teach. So I interviewed and really felt that that was my calling and my connection, to relate to college students who are learning how to be therapists. And I also realized that if I teach others how to do speech therapy, for each student I teach, that person can go out and serve that many more people who need speech and language therapy.
My goodness, your parents' servant heart again. Now, that's a long, hard trail for a young woman to do your graduate work through your master's degree, your PhD. What would you say to a person who was looking at that, say to a young woman? What would you grant her as a piece of thought or wisdom?
To a young woman, I would say, if you're interested in a PhD, seek it quickly. I waited. I didn't get my PhD until much later in life. Although I enjoyed it immensely, I would say seek it early.
Go ahead and commit quickly.
Yes.
You have been a delight to be with us, and I think you've been of great service to our listeners, because aphasia and stroke is hovering there for all of us, and you've been most helpful. Thank you for appearing today.
Thank you for having me.
Thanks for joining us today. I'm Ted Dotts. You've been listening to Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1. All previous shows on KTTZ may be got through the internet at kttz.org. Click on 89.1 and then on Faith Matters.
You've been listening to Faith Matters with your host, Ted Dotts. Support for Faith Matters comes from Covenant Health. working to improve health and quality of life in our communities. Join us next Sunday for another edition of Faith Matters on KTTZ FM 89.1, a service of Texas Tech Public Radio.